Good September afternoon. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood here in North Dakota. Hope you're able to enjoy it as we plan ahead for what's going to be coming up with harvest and so much more. I see combines rolling out of sheds. I see grain bins being conditioned so things are ready to go once we do begin harvest in earnest. I've had several questions about sugar beets, and full harvest usually starts right around the 1st of October for our sugar beet growers. With weather like this, well, they wouldn't be starting on a day as today. It actually gets to be too warm. We don't want to put warm sugar beets in a pile because they can decompose, cause hot spots, and well, that's not good for the overall health of the storage facility. So we're going to wait for things to cool off before we start bringing those sugar beets in. We have been getting a number of dry beans out of the field, and it seems like most folks are saying conditions are okay. Dry beans this summer had to live through a lot, much like many crops, whether it was hail, heavy wind with derechos. There was also some concern having to heavily fungicide for potential disease problems. So we're doing the best we can with what we've got. But it's been a busy year, and we're thankful that you are joining us today to talk about what's happening in ag all across the region. We're coming to you from the Coral Laundromat Studios because farming, well, it's dirty. And you might be thinking about getting some things ready for fall. Even past harvest, there's hunting season. So for those of you hunters who need to get things cleaned up from last year to get ready to go for this season, whether it's bow hunting or waiting for gun season, you can take your clothing in, and they have unscented cleaners that you can be using at the Coral Laundromat. It is over there on 3620 Veterans Boulevard in Fargo. You can drop off or take care of your laundry right there while you're there yourself. And I have been working ahead because later this week I will have one of our assistant ag directors with me on air. That'll be Allison Smith joining us on Thursday. Well, Allison is sponsored by Cass County Farm Bureau. And we say a big thank you to Cass County Farm Bureau, not only for their sponsorship in this situation, but the many things that they do around the area. They sponsor the Ag Education Building out at the Red River Valley Fairgrounds and have done so since 2010. The North Dakota Farm Bureau Foundation for the last 5 years has been helping sponsor Farm Bureau ongoing activities and efforts, especially in ag education, because one of their pillars is ag education and youth. And that is why they are such a great part of our Assistant Ag Director program here on WDAY. And thank you to them for being a sponsor for us. Throughout the day, you are welcome to give me a call on the JLA insurance phone line, 701-293-9000. Always happy to hear from you. I will also be sure to keep an eye on my email where you can reach me, ag@flagfamily.com. If you got a message for Dean, you can certainly go ahead and send that to me, and I'll forward it to him for the day. And you might be following us on social media, which means you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, or Acres TV at WDAY, Weather and Ag in Focus. I have an early guest joining me today, and I'm excited to have Stu Letcher on the phone with me. And Stu is the executive director. If I get the title wrong, Stu's going to correct me. And Stu is with the North Dakota Grain Dealers Association. All right, Stu, for those who aren't necessarily sure, tell us what the Grain Dealers Association does right here in the state of North Dakota, please.
So we are the commercial representative for the commercial grain industry here in North Dakota. So grain elevators, feed mills, processing. We are the entity that represents them on local and national issues.
Excellent. And one of the things is you have been doing this for quite some time. You're very well versed in so many areas for the grain dealers, and especially with legislative policy, et cetera. And even when it comes to some of the things that will be happening at harvest. And you heard me mention one day that I had been hearing some rumors of elevators in North Dakota not taking and fulfilling contracts on soybeans for farmers. Can you kind of explain the situation? And I'm not asking to name names or regions or anything like that, but give us a little background on what was going on and what led to a press release from the Grain Dealers Association to clear up some rumors in the marketplace.
Yeah, sure. And if you've been paying attention to agriculture, you're probably well aware of the fact that we've been trying to get a trade deal with China, and China is probably our biggest purchaser of soybeans in the state. And as of right now, we don't have a trade deal with China. So that means our soybean market is really weak right now. That doesn't mean there's not a soybean market. It just means that our prices probably aren't where the producer would like them to be. So, you know, there is, it's, if you're an elevator, you're trying to, you know, sell into a market that where there's demand. And just right now there isn't demand for soybeans. So, that kind of led to some speculation in the country, that, you know, our soybeans going to be, or our elevator is going to be taking soybeans. Is there going to be a market? You know, what's the price going to be? And we also heard that there might be some elevators that wouldn't be honoring contracts. And just to get out ahead of it, we as an association put out a press release stating, hey, you know what? There are a lot of different options for soybeans this year at harvest. It's not a normal year, so things might be a little bit different, but that doesn't mean we're not taking soybeans or there isn't a market. It just means that, you know, you might have to be a little more creative. So we're encouraging producers to talk to their local marketers or their local elevator to find out what the programs are. Don't just listen to the rumors. And I guess was our point. Communication is the key. So
I think that's a huge point because when some of the first messages were being sent around amongst producers and so forth, there was an interpretation of, well, that just means I don't have a place to sell my soybeans. The reality is we still do have places to sell soybeans. But if you've been hoping to just put a truck in line with a load of beans on it at harvest, it might not be so easy as they're just going to dump you and move on. I think that's probably the most accurate way to describe the situation right now.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, you probably can do that. But just be aware that if you do that, the elevators probably, a lot of them have cash-only programs, meaning, you know, you're not going to be allowed to do a price-later contract. Or if they do allow you to do a price-later contract, there's going to be probably some higher service fees associated with that. So you just want to be aware of those things because you don't want to dump the beans and then find out, oh, wait a minute, I can't market them the way I normally do, and this is the price I'm stuck getting. You know, so you want to be aware of that in case, you know, maybe in some areas the producer will decide he wants to store the soybeans and, you know, maybe capitalize on market opportunities later on in the marketing year. So there again, you don't know that until you talk to your local elevator, your local elevator manager, and find out what they got going on.
Farming is very much a relationship business. And if you aren't in the door at your local grain elevator talking to your grain merchandiser, whomever you're doing business with, now is really the time to not only be thinking about, is my combine ready to go, but do I have a plan? Because there, it's a little bit different everywhere. There's not always a standardized plan of operation, you might say. And that's that way anytime at harvest. You should never skip the opportunity to have that plan laid out, not only with your grain merchandiser, but probably then bring your banker in to that conversation as well. So your banker has a clear direction of what you're going to be doing too. And I know we don't always talk about banking issues. It's maybe not where grain dealers needs to go, but it's maybe just a friendly reminder to have that discussion with your banker whenever you get the chance. And you've maybe heard that from others as well, Stu.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you say, if, you know, a normal year, we would probably see the soybeans being sold off the combine. And that usually kind of is what generates the cash flow for repayments for loans and things like that. Well, this year, maybe it's another crop, wheat or corn, that gets sold and you store the soybeans. There again, if you decide to do that, you just want to, you know, tell your plan to your banker so he's well aware too, because the way that marketing option looks might be a little bit different. Corn is going to be a little later than soybeans. So you just want to let them know that, hey, this is my plan and we will have the cash flow, but it's just going to take a little longer. So, you know, there again, communicate, right?
Yes. Stu, have you gotten calls from members asking what you're hearing politically or legislatively that might be coming to the aid of the farm economy right now? Or Has that discussion not really taken place at this point?
Oh, no, I think those discussions have taken place. I know that our representatives in Washington, D.C. are well aware of the situation, and they have, there is going to be funds available. It was, you know, there was funds in the One Big Beautiful Bill, and, you know, those will be available. The problem is it'll be a year from now when those funds become available for this marketing year. The interesting thing is there'll be funds for this year, but it's going to take a while. And I know also there has been talk recently at the USDA about some, you know, relief programs they're going to maybe possibly try and do in the short term here.
Okay.
So that's what I'm hearing.
Okay.
Yeah, and just exactly what that would entail, I don't know that they have a framework yet, but I know the discussions are going on anyway.
I bet they are. Okay, Stu, would it be okay if you hang on? I saw an article in regards to grain dealer state statutes, and I just wanted to ask about some of the things that are here in North Dakota versus maybe other states as well, things that we normally do. And I thought this would be a great time as we approach harvest to maybe visit about that and what these mean. So could you stay with us through the American Ag Network's livestock report?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, that would be great. We will be back, and when we do, we'll continue our discussion today with Stu Letcher. He is with North Dakota Grain Dealers Association. And don't forget, if you have not yet put in your nomination for your favorite first aid responder or first responder, whether that's police, fire, ambulance, etc., you can still do that on our website, wdayradionow.com, because that person could be able to win a meet and greet with Lee Bryce backstage coming up at the Shields Arena for the Lee Bryce concert on September 27th. Hang tight. We'll be right back. Well, if you would like to have your tech support for your farm and agribusiness internet and security as smooth and great as this current weather forecast, you're going to want to talk to TechSupportFarm.com. Chris Sherman at Tech Support Farm is there to take care of you, make sure that we prevent hacking, we prevent spoofing, and above all, to make sure that your security, your cameras, all of your internet access is smooth and just for you, not those other hackers and nefarious villains that might be out there. Joining me today is Stu Letcher. He's with North Dakota Grain Dealers Association. And okay, Stu, I had read an article that in the Top Producer magazine about 8 provisions of grain dealer state statutes to know, and it has to do with grain elevators and grain warehouses and things that they have and where they apply for each state. And one of them that came up was licensing. The second was auditing. And I was very surprised that that's not standard through all the states. And by auditing, I mean just basic information, grower name, date of sale, condition of grain. Why would someone not want to take that information?
You know, that's a good question. But there are some states that do not have a grain regulation program. So there's nobody to really standardize the process. So, you know, if you're obviously going to sell grain, you want to know what quality and things you have, but you know, it's not, like you say, a standard process in some states. So, here in North Dakota, it is, though. So that's the good news.
Who creates the rules like this in North Dakota? Does that come to us legislatively? Is that proposed by the Grain Dealers Association? And some of those rules include bonding or the actions that are taken when there's a failure to pay. Who starts that process and how does that get accomplished?
Okay, yeah, so the grain regulation is actually part of the Ag Department is who does the regulation for grain elevators. They do the licensing. We do have annual licensing here in North Dakota. We also have bonding. So if you want to be a grain buyer in North Dakota, you have to be licensed and bonded. Part of the licensing process is being bonded. And so that is regulated by the North Dakota Ag Department. They also do audits. So they will, anybody that has a grain buyer's license, whether it be warehouse or roving grain buyer or processor, whatever the types of licenses there are, they will be audited by the Ag Department annually. So we do have regulators out there checking on our industry to make sure that everybody is following the rules. So that's the good news.
When it comes to problems and concerns, it's been a while since we've had a grain facility failure, et cetera. And so these rules are in place to prevent that from happening. But it's really, it's a two-way street, right? It protects the farmer. It protects the grain elevators. And do you see that with the farm economy, the way things stand right now, we should have some concerns about what might be happening with some of our grain elevators this year, and some of these rules might have to be enacted, you might say?
I don't see a problem. When margins get tight on the farm, they get tight in the commercial industry too. But I think, everybody is very cognizant of the fact that, things are tight. And so they watch, they have risk management tools in place to make sure that we don't have situations where we have failures. To speak to your point about how that's handled, if there is an insolvency, is essentially how that gets started is if a producer is waiting to get paid for grain, and the whoever is buying the grain from them, if they do not pay, they would contact the ag department, and the ag department would begin an investigation, and it is determined that the entity cannot pay, then insolvency proceedings would start, and actually the ag department would step in and take over some things, and the grain would go into receivership to pay outstanding payees. So there is a specific process. Now the good news is we haven't had one in a while, that hopefully we don't, but there is a process in place if that does happen.
I would like to think that we're not going to have one either. I think that business-wise, people have gotten really good at watching their P&Ls and making sure that they don't get overextended into some of those positions that may have happened in the past. And I think that businesses just get run a little bit more efficiently and smoothly here in the state of North Dakota, as well as our local surrounding area, because we've lived through some of these things in the past. Nobody wants to do them a second time. Stu, as folks are thinking about what North Dakota grain dealers can do for them, are there points you want to make sure to make that folks know about your organization, and then also how they could reach you when they do want to visit?
Yes, actually, we represent the commercial grain industry, but we are here for the producer as well. If you have questions about certain aspects of the grain licensing law, or if you have asked questions about certain legislation, we're always here to help. You can reach us at 701-235-4184 or at ndgda.org is our website. We're here to answer questions. We occasionally get questions from producers about different buyers that are out there. Just remember that if you do have a question about somebody that's buying grain, the ag department does maintain a list of licensed buyers on their website, and we can also help with that. So just keep that in mind. If you're going to do business with somebody in the grain industry, just make sure they're licensed and bonded.
I think that's really solid advice. And Stu, I really appreciate you sending me the news release that was going on late last week about what's happening with the soybean market in North Dakota, and making sure that people are very clear that contracts are still being fulfilled. Talk to your merchandisers. Make sure you have a clear plan of action for harvest this year. I do appreciate that, because I like it when, if I say something and folks say, wait a minute, I have more information or better information, let's make sure we get you on there to talk about it. So, Stu, have a great rest of your afternoon.
Yes, you too. Thanks for calling.
All right, folks. When we return, we will not only talk a little bit more about the weather, which is graciously brought to us by Progressive Ag, the risk management specialist, but we will continue with the discussion. We will be joined by Jeff Ballou, and he is with H2A Visa Solutions. We're going to talk about H2A workers in North Dakota for farms. Happy Monday to you, and we look at a week full of great weather with highs today of 78. our overnight lows for the rest of the week are in the low 50s into upper 40s. So some excellent sleeping weather out there as we prepare ourselves for fall. But enjoy the week, mostly 70s and 80s, which feels a little bit unusual, but yet very welcome for the month of September. And all of our weather updates are brought to you by Progressive Ag Risk Management Specialists. Also, a thank you for the weather that we had this year as we raised our wheat for Here We Grow 2025. We custom farmed 20 acres of wheat, brought it all the way through harvest, even through some hail damage, some wind, a little bit of insect pressure as well. But we've harvested, we've sold the grain back in to be used for commercial seed. And a big thank you to two of our sponsors. One was Thor Buildings, because let's face it, if you need a right-sized building for equipment or livestock on your farm, that's crucial to your success, and Thor Buildings can help. They're going to customize it and make sure it fits what you need for the weather in your neck of the woods. And then also ND Estate Services. If you haven't had a chance to talk to Mark Wagner, please take the time. He wants to make sure to protect you when it comes to guardianship, probate, and help you out when you can save on taxes. There's so many things happening on farm, particularly with farm transitions happening in a lot of operations. I am fortunate to be joined today by Jeff Ballou, and Jeff is with H2A Visa Solutions. Jeff, can you describe your business for folks who are listening so we have a little better sense of what you do for folks?
Yeah, thank you for having me, Bridget, for having me join your show today. Ultimately, what our goal is really is just so when Wage and Hours shows up for an H2A investigation, we protect the farms. And we just developed a very simple way to cost effectively make it easy. And as a company, my mission is really on just bringing together the best technologies, getting vendors and partners to work together as a team to really help the farm succeed.
When you say bringing the vendors together to help the farm succeed, can you give an example of what that might look like?
Yeah, perfect. So in the last year, I've been working very closely with USA Farm Labor, which I had the opportunity to be next to at the Big Iron Show. And we've spoken to well over 200 of their clients. And so as a result, we've found that most people we talk to just aren't ready for a wage and hours investigation. So we've teamed up. With the focus is to really make sure that, you know, that those worst 72 hours of your life in conversations with one of the vendors at the show, it was like, you know, a wage and hours investigation can be worse than an IRS audit. So ultimately, they've asked us to help their clients be ready.
So what's involved in an investigation like that? And do they happen very often?
Well, they're not that frequent. But what's involved is you have 72 hours, and in that 72 hours, you have to have all of your records compliant. You have to basically have a lot of information that when you look at the cost and the time involved in that 72 hours, it's a very painful experience. And so ultimately, our goal is just to make it non-painful.
Well, I think non-painful would be really great. Most of us would appreciate something like that. So when you... How did all of this start? Were you part of an organization where you were working with a lot of H2A workers and you realized this need to try to help out?
Great question. I started my career off in HR and payroll for the last 20 years, and I tried to develop an H2A program with quite a few payroll providers out there. And ultimately, I found the niche, and it's the record keeping. About 90% of the clients that I speak with don't understand H2A. They don't understand the complexities of the record keeping. So with a hyper focus on record keeping, that's where I started. But here's where things shifted. In conversations to over 300 farms, I kind of realized we've gone about it wrong. And really what the farms want, they don't want the technology. They don't want all the noise. They just want a simple way to report their information, know they're compliant, and carry on with farming. So as my business evolved, I've teamed up with former Wage and Hours H2A investigators named Warren Williams. Warren spent 23 years investigating from Georgia to Florida. And so what we did is we just took a look at all the questions that he would ask some of the during his investigations and put it into a simple questionnaire that the farms could answer. And then from there, what we do is we really review what gaps we've seen. And then when we've understood the business, we've got your records compliant, ready to go, I've teamed up with Hall Global, who's a well-known H-2A attorney. So the three of us as a team, that's probably the core of it. And they've asked, and USA Farm Labor has asked us to reach out to their customers and really help them out.
Would you have some suggestions for farmers when they have their H-2A workers, some very easy couple of reminders of things that they could do to improve that record keeping in order to make sure that they're prepared in case there was an investigation, or maybe even avoid the issue of having an investigation?
Great question. Happy to share with what we've found. The most common errors that we find on the record keeping is pretty simple. Make sure you have your federal tax identification number on the pay stub. Make sure you have hours offered. And this is really where people get confused. There is a difference between hours offered and hours worked. Most of the farms mm-hmm. I talk to will say, yeah, our workers work, you know, 30, 15 hours a day. We never have a problem with the hours offered. But when the wage and hours shows up, they're looking at your pay stub. They're looking for FEIN so they can identify all the employees associated to the contract. Then they're looking at hours offered to ensure you're filling the contract requirements. Almost everybody misses that part of it. And the problem is a lot of the systems that are built today really don't make it easy. So often QuickBooks is a payroll tool used by farms and accountants. They're not designed for that. So that's one thing that you can do. And you can write it on there. As long as it's on the pay stub delivered to the worker on payday, that's number one problem we see out there is the FEIN, hours offered. The second part is the posters. Outside of H-2A posters on the work site, you also have the Migrant Seasonal Protection Act, the MSPA posters. So make sure you have those posters because the fines add up. One pay stub out of compliance is $2,166. If we fix it before wage and hour shows up, they can't fine you for it. $3,200 for a MSPA poster. So those are pretty easy. On my website, h2abusinesssolutions.com, I have the posters there, which you can download. And those are the ones that are the most common out there, Bridget.
Well, and I think that just what you mentioned, those are rather easily overlooked items that you're running an operation. You have so many other things going on, particularly if it's spring planting or harvest, and that just maybe isn't at the forefront of your mind. That's got to be accomplished, but probably more overlooked than misguided or in any way. A question about policy. And by the way, for those who are listening, if they would like to call and ask questions, they can do so on the JLA insurance phone line of 701-293-9000. But Jeff, my question to you would be, have you seen some policy changes in the last couple of years? And do you give recommendations to folks about how to better interpret and follow those policies as there may be some changes at a government level?
Probably not the right person to provide that advice. However, there have been some changes recently that are major impacts to the farms. One is the wage reform for farmers. The administration has moved away. There used to be a survey that was handled by the USDA and ultimately is costing small farms thousands of dollars. So there has been a recent change in the way that the wages are handled out there, which is a big win for the farmers. The second thing is the process. It was just changed to where no longer for return workers have to go through an interview process. Now, if you're bringing workers up from Mexico, that can be really costly because the farms are required to, you know, transport them, house them, take care of all of that. So making it easier, reducing the costs, less contracts, these are great wins to really help the farms, but also help the H-2A program. Most of the farms I talk to, it's too expensive, it's too complicated. And like you said, how do you run a farm? I'm an H-2A geek. I live and breathe this stuff every day, and I learn something every day. And I'm like, how do you run a farm? I mean, how is it done? How do you do all the things and the complexities of running a farm and then be an expert in H-2A? Now, if you're a big farm and you've got resources and teams to support you, great. You don't have to worry about that. But when you look at like North Dakota and look at these farms out there, they typical farms have 2 to 3 South African workers driving heavy equipment, ag equipment operators. And that's just not an area people understand. And so it's a problem. But ultimately, the administration is making some changes, making it more cost effective, making it easier to get workers here. So good things are happening for the H-2A program and the farms.
Jeff, should farms talk to you before they apply for their H-2A workers so that they can get it right from the get-go, or are you able to join more in like the midline of the whole process once workers are already stateside?
I'd be happy to talk to new farms that are interested in H2A. I would instantly refer them over to my partners. USA Farm Labor has about 300 H2A clients up in North Dakota. They take on the front end of it, of helping identify qualified workers and get into the farm. But whether you're new to H2A or existing, you still have to be ready from a compliance perspective. Nothing's going to change around there. So I'm happy to help from the front of it, work with my team at USA Farm Labor. But ultimately, it's once the workers are there and they arrive on the farm, it's that payroll record keeping. That's where we really step in and do the heavy lifting.
And I think that's vital to more people than they might realize. So, Jeff, if folks are interested after hearing your conversation with me today and they want to reach out and learn more, where could they do that?
Absolutely. My website, h2avisasolutions.com. And or you, if you're new to H2A, my team over at USA Farm Labor at 828-246-0659 would be happy to answer any questions and refer you directly to me.
I appreciate that. Thanks for joining me today, Jeff.
Thank you very much, Bridget, for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, folks, stay tuned. Wanted to make one more little quick hit of the weather, and we've got some other headlines to talk about before the end of the hour. We'll be back. Here we are in September, and it is Suicide Prevention Month, and we want to make sure that folks are really focusing in on Thursdays when you join us here for Weather and Ag in Focus in the Coral Laundromat Studio, because we want to dedicate our programming on those days to talking about raising the awareness of our suicide crisis in agriculture right now. And it's not just our farmers or ranchers, it's many who are associated with the industry, all the way from food processing to the auxiliary items such as banking, crop insurance, equipment sales, and so much more. Tomorrow, we are going to kick off a little early in the week. On a Tuesday, we'll be joined by Alex Richard. He is with Maple River Grain and Agronomy to visit with us about this topic. And Maple River Grain and Agronomy has been a sponsor for the month of September for keeping the awareness high for everyone. And then Thursday, we'll be joined by folks from Valley Christian Counseling. Also, thank you to Gowan and Cray St. John for the work that they have been doing with us this September in keeping this on the forefront of everyone's mind. A couple of quick headlines that are happening these days. One of them is that a new report over the weekend is that the New World screwworm has been detected within 70 miles of the U.S.-Mexico border. We do know that that has been a concern for several months. Truthfully, we have been told by many livestock experts it was a matter of time before we started to see the screwworm crossing over into the U.S. across the border. You can't really put up a wall and stop a fly. Not even a giant swatter is going to do that. You know, big fly swatter, probably not going to catch them all. And that screwworm lays its eggs under the skin of healthy livestock, whether it would be beef cattle, it can be deer and other mammals, and then they move across the border, the larvae hatches, and more flies emerge. That larvae attacks healthy tissue on the plants and can ultimately lead to death, especially in the case of small animals like calves. If there's any sort of a scrape or puncture wound, whether it even was from vaccination or other ways that we were treating animals, you can see the fly larvae in that wound. So be very, very careful. We're watching the biosecurity along the border very closely and have really been doing as much as possible to build up quickly a sterile fly facility in Mexico to help spread male sterile flies to keep the females from being able to breed and create more flies. That's just one topic that's going on. Also, I would want to visit with you about the fact that as we are thinking about getting into fall, this is a cash flow crunch time of the year for many farmers. You've got all your money sunk into the crop, and now you're waiting for harvest when you would be able to sell your crop. But in between there, you're waiting for some dollars to come in, and we're not seeing super prices on our corn and soybeans. So it's not like you're selling off that or wheat or something else in anticipation of a little more cash flow. This is a time to, as we mentioned earlier in the show, have a conversation with your lender to make sure that they know what you're doing. What's your plan of attack? And what are you sitting on for grain inventories, as well as your cash flow situation, et cetera? In fact, bringing your lender to the farm can be very helpful. They have an opportunity to see your operation eyes first they can see instead of on paper what's truly happening in front of them. What's going on with your livestock? How does your crop look? You can talk heart to heart about what's going to be happening or needs to happen. If you have multi-generations on the farm, maybe it's time to bring in some of those folks who normally aren't a part of the financial discussion so they can visit with the banker as well. It's never too soon to build that trusting relationship with your lender. And it goes both ways. Your lender needs to trust you. And if you realize that you've outgrown the lender that you're working with and need to look for someone different, that would be the time to start thinking about that, talking over what it looks like with the rest of your farm operation. Because not only do farmers shop for lenders on a frequent basis and should, because it helps to keep the best operation going forward. I think lenders are always looking for what they can do for farmers and those who maybe aren't even their customers at this point. A couple of other short and quick items that are currently happening. China has boosted their soybean purchases from Argentina and Uruguay. We know that that has been happening over the last few months. In fact, Chinese processors may be buying up to 10 million metric tons of soybeans from those two South American exporters in the 25-26 marketing year that ends next August. And this is information that is coming from some traders based in Asia. And so far, China has already booked 2.4 million tons from Uruguay and Argentina, with more to come. Australia is forecasting their fourth largest wheat crop on record. That forecast dramatically upgraded following some heavier than expected rainfall across their major grain growing belt in the region. And the nation's total 2025 grain harvest is expected to be about 62 million tons. ADM is ceasing operations at a Bushnell, Illinois plant. It's not that we do a lot of work in Illinois and we don't have a lot of barge traffic for our soybeans, but it does affect the overall market across the U.S. Thanks for joining me today. Looking forward to tomorrow. There'll be more headlines, an update on the weather, and guests as well. Talk to you then.